Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to Morning Sense. It is 9:31 a.m. Ding, ding, ding. The market is now open on May 4th, 2022. It's Wednesday, if I'm correct. Going through how the market is opening right now, the S&P is up 0.06%. The NASDAQ is down 0.11%, 0.13%. It looks like we're going to get a mixed to flat day, at least for now, right? So at least we haven't gapped up or gapped down on the open. The NASDAQ, slightly weaker than the S&P though, right now. Going to gold, gold is flat overnight at $1,870 per ounce, and oil is up almost 5% over the last day to $107 a barrel. In Europe, going to the FTSE 100 is down 0.5%, DAX is flat, and the stock 600 is down 0.4%. In Asia, the Asia Dow is down 0.16%. The Nikkei 225 is down 0.11, so pretty flat day. The Hang Seng down 1.1%, but the Shanghai Index up 2.4%. Moving on to our first story. And before we move on, don't forget to hit the like button to help us on this new small channel. And always feel free to join us on the Q&A upvoting, downvoting board and potentially win some raffles on the Meeting Pulse. QR code right here and link always in the description. And as always, thank you so much for joining. You can always find the replays on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts, or on YouTube, as usual. All right, so the first economic story we have today is that job openings and the number of times workers quit reached the highest levels on record in March, as a shortage of available workers continued to pressure the U.S. labor market. The Labor Department reported yesterday a seasonally adjusted 11.5 million openings in March, an increase from 11.3 million the prior month, and the number of times workers quit their jobs rose to 4.5 million in the same month, slightly higher than the previous record in November of last year. Meanwhile, hiring cooled slightly from the month before to 6.5 million. So the takeaway here is that there has never been more job openings. There's so many jobs that employers want filled, yet workers are quitting their job much more heavily than in the past. And hiring is cooling a little bit as we're not getting enough matchmaking for these 11.5 million jobs. Going down to this little chart here, you can visualize the jobs gap. But you know, separate private sector estimates showed that demand for labor remained red hot through April. Consumer-facing industries such as accommodation and food services, along with arts and entertainment, had the highest rate of job openings. So this whole hot job market is kind of happening in the lower band, the service band. If you have this really technically high-skilled job, it's probably still a very strong job market for you. But just remember that this is just an overall average and may be different depending on the different pockets. Going on to the next macro story, Europe scrambles for energy before cutting itself off from Russia. Europe, clearly with the war in Ukraine, is caught between a rock and a hard place, the rock being they are dependent on Russia for a high amount of their oil, gas, and energy supplies and commodities, but on the hard place being they are morally very much against the war in Ukraine and national security wise as well. So they're racing to stock up on oil and natural gas before it imposes tighter sanctions on Russian energy, showing the dash to reorganize global energy supplies in the wake of the war in Ukraine. Terminals to import liquefied natural gas or LNG took a record amount of super chilled fuel for the time in April. Oil imports from non-Russian suppliers hit their highest level since the start of the pandemic. So they're just trying to tear themselves away from the dependence on Russian oil. So I think the interesting thing about this article is the this chart we have here in the Wall Street Journal showing the amount of European liquid natural gas imports by origin. Usage really went up in obviously usage is very seasonal, by the way, as well. So just remember that. So imports peaked kind of in that springtime to mid summer of last year, coming very much from having a lot from Russia as a baseline, but it did seem to be very equal amounts from Russia, North America, Middle East, and Africa. And now, kind of in 2022, with all this happening, they need more energy now that the pandemic is loosening up. And there, it seems like the Russia amount is sort of flat, and they've been filling the gap in terms of demand from North America. So that's pretty cool. It's just kind of something to keep watching in the oil markets, in case those of you are commodities focused. Thanks so much, and good morning to you, to everyone. Hi, James. Hi, Kevin. Hey, Nuno. Hey, Caesar. Sarah, Stefan, Kenneth, Evan, Felipe, Missy. Hey, everyone. Appreciate you all joining us live. And don't forget to hit that like button. Moving on to crypto land. Let's move on to crypto land and check on how the crypto markets are doing. Bitcoin is up 1.4% over the past day. It's now at almost $39,000 per Bitcoin. Ether is at $28.60, up about less than 1%. Solana is at $88, XRP at 62 cents, BNB at almost $390, Terra Luna at $85, Cardano at 82 cents, Dogecoin, I know everybody owns Dogecoin, at 13 cents. So yet again, another day in the books where crypto is showing an incredible amount of stability in the face of a very wacky and wild equities market. I mean, look at the stability that Bitcoin has showed from being high 30,000s in the beginning of the year and still being at the high 30,000s, very stable, versus the NASDAQ is down like 20%. Interesting. I don't think anybody would have guessed. A big story in the Wall Street Journal in crypto land is that The NFT market is collapsing. The sale of non-fungible tokens, or NFTs, fell to a daily average about 19,000 this week, a 92% decline from a peak of 225,000 NFTs sold in September. So 225,000 sold daily in September, down to 19,000. The number of active wallets in the NFT market fell 88%. To about 14,000 last week from a high of 119,000 in November. Just a reminder, NFTs are Bitcoin-like digital tokens that act as a certificate of ownership that live on the blockchain that signify that you own something. A lot of people have been using it for PFPs or profile pictures that are art, or fractional ownership in something, or full ownership in something, or you own 1 out of 100 mint of something, or something like that is a mix of art and a club membership like the Bored Apes Yacht Club, Mutant Apes, stuff like that. Obviously, this is in the tempest of the macro environment where rising interest rates have crushed risky bets across all financial markets. But in a very stable crypto market, I don't think NFTs have any excuse here. But this is something that I think a lot of us have predicted, that NFTs seem to be interesting technology, but a bit of a bubble. People making millions and millions of dollars just selling NFTs, minting anything, drawing something and minting it 1 out of 100 and trying to trade them around. Yet they don't really have a ton of use case other than, oh, I think this art is going to be worth more tomorrow than it is today. So I've always said I haven't been buying NFTs. It's impossible to tell what NFTs are going to do really well, except for if you own something that's probably going to be culturally relevant in 100 years on the internet. Who knows if random pterodactyl apes are going to be good, right? I've never heard of pterodactyl apes, but they may fall into irrelevancy and be worthless, and you'll lose a lot of money. But one could imagine that CryptoPunks, being the first NFTs out there, will do well because they have a scarcity to them. But the let's go to CryptoPunks OpenSea. In order to buy a CryptoPunk, the average CryptoPunk is going for volume trade activity. Let's see what the last... The average daily price is 77 ETH for CryptoPunk. And if you do the math, what is that? 77 times, like, call it 3,000. Yeah, it's $250,000 per CryptoPunk. So that's like buying $250,000 painting. So, again, outside of that, I think we all could have seen this coming. And those owning NFTs are probably hurting, unless you own something that's, you know, very prime time. I'm not saying CryptoPunks are a scam, by the way. Or sorry, I'm not saying NFTs are a scam. I'm just saying it's the blockchain equivalent of a barcode. So you have to focus on you're buying the barcode to what? Always remember that. Thanks so much. Buenos dias, Cesar. Bobby, good morning. Don't forget to hit that like button and also upvote some Q&A in the Meeting Pulse. QR code there, link in the description. Moving on to the next story in crypto land. Council of Europe calls for crypto laundering clampdown. The council's Money Val committee warned of fraud, tax evasion, and market manipulation taking place through virtual assets. European states were urged to clamp down on crypto-enabled money laundering by the Council of Europe's MoneyVal Committee in a report published today. MoneyVal, which monitors smaller U.S. European states' compliance with dirty money norms, warned of the challenges posed by DeFi, privacy coins, and others, and what it said was market manipulation of major crypto assets. It is well known that money launderers have been abusing cryptocurrencies from their inception a decade ago. Methods are becoming ever more sophisticated and larger in scale, extending from drug trafficking in areas such as fraud, corruption, and tax evasion. This is yet another kind of story out there about Europe really trying to clamp down on crypto and the wrongdoings. You know, my point of view on the subject from yesterday, I think it's, you know, we should clamp down on money laundering and illegal activities. But I think the rhetoric out of Europe is very, it just sounds very anti-crypto. Don't you agree? Anyway, checking in on the markets yet again, let's refresh Market Watch. So the S&P is up 0.12%. The NASDAQ is down 0.09% in a pretty flat to mixed day. So this is going to be a very stock-specific day. Moving on to stock-specific news while we're at it. His AMD sales jumped 71%, shrugging off concerns of a PC slowdown. They reported Q1 earnings that beat analyst estimates, sending the stock up a lot today. Just checking up on the stock right now. As we speak, AMD stock is at $94.86 a share, up 4% on the day, after spiking to $98 yesterday. So people may have front run the news and expectations might have been a little bit higher. That's why it's not up more. But going back to the actual results, EPS was $1.13 per share adjusted versus 91. So it was a really big beat. And they increased EPS by almost 120% year over year. And revenue was $5.9 billion versus $5.5 billion expected, up 71% year over year. So this was a very big beat. And AMD is just running on all cylinders. And I tweeted that you may not like it, But Lisa Su is what peak performance looks like. She's awesome. She is one of the greatest CEOs out there in tech. And I think she needs more respect on her name. You know, they're still growing fiercely. 71% sales growth in the first quarter. And the I think this is amid concerns that PC sales could shrink. We're headed into a recession. People won't buy new computers. You know, work from home is waning, PC boom is over, and we're lapping very high growth from last year. PC sales are reported in the computing and graphics segment, which rose 33% year over year, and 8% quarter over quarter. Cloud server sales are reported in the embedded enterprise and semi-custom segment, which increased 88%. So cloud server, they continue to take market share in the database and cloud segment. Crazy. And last week, Intel gave a disappointing forecast for June, citing weak PC demand and macroeconomic challenges. So maybe overall PC demand and database demand isn't doing so well, but AMD is eating your lunch, Intel, which is the reason why I have been staying away from Intel as a potential value trap. This is something, you know, but Intel's been beaten down so much. So over the last 6 months, they're only down about 10.5% versus AMD has been down 31% in this growth stock re-rating. So again, stock price is not equal over a given period of time, does not equal stock price or fundamental stuff. Over the past 5 years though, AMD is up 830%, just a reminder, and Intel's only up 22%, meaningfully underperforming the S&P. So Intel is just basically a flat value stock, and you have to believe in a turnaround. And it sounds like the turnaround, it hasn't started yet, given AMD is growing very aggressively in a market that's maybe waning. And whose market share is that coming from? And that reminds me of There Will Be Blood milkshake scene. And in case you haven't seen this movie, it's a good movie. It's like a kind of a classic. I think we have audio where he says, "There, I drink your milkshake," and we're having fun today, so let's just play the clip. Eli.
It was Paul who was chosen.
Let's fast forward to the actual clip. Have you guys all seen this movie? It's about oil. Very relevant in today's. Well, my computer is overloaded with three screens and projecting out. Anyway, I'd recommend you see the movie. My computer clearly does not have the latest AMD chips in it. So, sorry guys. But AMD is drinking Intel's milkshake. Moving on to Uber and Lyft. Lyft earnings. So Lyft, I deleted those tabs, but Lyft's shares are plunging right now because their outlook was really, really bad. So Lyft was the latest casualty in what's been a brutal earnings season for tech stocks, reported a net loss of almost $200 million in a quarter. Although Wall Street did estimate something somewhat this bad, revenue was $875 million, was better than the $849 million expected, but they're still actively very, very unprofitable. And during the earnings call, the management unveiled its outlook and said that they expect second quarter revenue to be $950 million to a billion below estimates, and for adjusted earnings, EBITDA, to be between 10 and 20 million, which is below analyst expectations of recovering snapback travel economy, they expected over 80 million in EBITDA profit. This will set us up for the long term and ensure we're doing everything we can do to take care of our drivers and riders with the best possible experience. We also expect to invest in key business initiatives to support the continued growth of our company. I don't know if I agree with this. Lyft is losing market share to Uber, and we'll talk about Uber in a sec, but Lyft is down 31%. Look at this cliff. So from IPO in 2019, if you bought in IPO, you would have been down 73%. You would have lost almost 3/4 of your money. And from peak to trough, down 70%. We have stayed away from Lyft with a 10-foot pole here at Sense, at ROI Club. You all know that my better pick that we used to own was Uber, who brought up their report because they saw Lyft tanking and they didn't want their stock price reacting like that. We said, no. Like, we're doing really well. So Uber reported surging revenue during the first quarter. Surging revenue. as the rideshare company said, it's recovering from the coronavirus lows and wouldn't have put up significant investments to keep drivers on the platform. It reported a $5.9 billion loss during the period, though, attributed to its revaluation of equity investments. Uber is invested in a lot of different other companies, so you have to mark that down. Loss per share was 18 cents, X those items per share, which is a better than expected 24 cent per share loss. And revenue was $6.85 billion versus the $6.13 billion that was estimated, which was a pretty big beat. And gross bookings were anticipates gross bookings of 28.5 to 29.5 for the second quarters, for this quarter that we're in right now. And it expects adjusted EBITDA of almost $250 million, so 240 to 270 million. So they are now turning on the spigot on profitability. They expect to generate meaningful positive cash flows for the full year of 2022. CEO Dara has done a rabbit out of the hat, turning this company around. And they have a great, interesting, diversified model between mobility, which is ride sharing, and delivery. So gross bookings for mobility was a $10.7 billion, up 58% year over year. So the snapback of people doing rideshare. And delivery is now a bigger business at $13.9 billion in bookings, up 12% year over year over COVID comps. So they're still growing food and alcohol delivery, even lapping COVID comps. This company is doing very, very well, but I want to address something from the chat. I want to credit the right person. Nayan Patel is asking, how will Uber and Lyft be able to compete with Tesla's robotaxi? So I just want to say, Uber, let's actually value add from the stream, Sentio. Let's go to Sentio together and look up the valuation of Uber now. So if they are $250 million EBITDA company, Uber, VPT, let's go. At $27 a share, they're trading for about a $58, $59 billion valuation. And they're trading for an expected... Okay. 1.3 billion dollar EBITDA. Yet they are guiding to, let's see, where are they guiding? They said they were guiding for adjusted EBITDA to be 240 to 270 million. So let's say 250 million times four. So it's a billion in EBITDA now. So let's just say it's this, 1.3 billion. So they are still expensive, trading at 46 times EV to EBITDA. But if they can keep growing and scaling profitability to over 3 billion, you're starting to get to like 18, 19 times EV to EBITDA. So it's not particularly cheap, although it is a growth stock. Like, they are growing quite well. So I think there are better deals out there, but in case you were thinking about buying Uber at this point, just remember that it is mutually probably, we don't know, right, how it plays out, but Tesla solving and getting it all approved, robotaxis and full level 4, level 5 autonomous driving is probably mutually exclusive to investing in Uber or Lyft, because a robotaxi would meaningfully destroy the network effects of Uber, because robotaxis would just be like, you could order robotaxis on the Tesla app. What I think actually happens in that paradigm is that Uber buys huge fleets of Teslas and still operates their app. But I think Uber's mobility value add goes meaningfully down if robotaxis happen in the next 5 to 10 years. I don't know. Put it in the chat, put it in the comments below if you're watching after the fact. Do you believe that Tesla / Waymo or anybody solves robotaxis in the next, and in what, how many years does it take for us to have it in more than half the states in America? So Put it in the chat. I really want to know what everybody thinks. I think it does not happen in the next 5 years. I think it might happen in the next 10 years, but not five. Heck, the last Tesla I owned with you know, the autopilot Gen 2 was 5 years ago. 5 years goes by like that. There's a lot of ways it could play out, by the way, but I think Uber's bullish thesis is very much like very hard to believe in if robotaxi gets solved in the next 10 years. Aaron Hurd is saying 25 years. Matthew saying 15 to 20 years. Chris is saying 20 plus years. JMK is saying 15 years. Okay. So yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with that. 15 plus years sounds like a good over under. 10 is maybe a little bullish. All right. Moving on to other earnings. Airbnb, ticker ABNB, says it expects to post its first full year net profit this year, profitability, after its revenue climbed 70% last quarter as people continued to book suburban rentals despite hosts raising prices. The travel economy is doing very, very well. People have been so pent up, they want to travel. I remember I had a trip planned to Spain and Portugal that had to get canceled. Oh, and Mykonos, Greece, that had to get canceled due to COVID 2 years ago. And that's all pent up. Like, I can't wait to go abroad, really abroad, and not just the 50 states. As we open up, there's a lot of that pent up demand. On top of that, there's this new trend of work from home, work from anywhere, digital nomad. As owning a home gets more unaffordable, being a digital nomad gets more attractive, and also the work from anywhere kind of thing. Airbnb posted a $1.5 billion revenue in Q1. This was a slight beat over the 1.45 expected by analysts. You know, value of bookings made on the platform grew almost 70%. Expect second quarter revenue to be between $2 to $2.13 billion, which is higher than revenue. So it's a beat and raise kind of thing. The company said it had over 30% more nights booked for summer travel than in 2019. So they're growing even ex-COVID. This is a big deal because Airbnb hadn't posted an annual profit. So now they're expecting to post their first annual profit this year. Hopefully we don't hit a huge recession. And just for value add, let's look at their Airbnb's valuation. VPT. They redid this whole thing. Thanks so much for being here, all 200 of you. Don't forget to like the video for the algorithm. $91 billion enterprise value company is Airbnb at $153 a share, trading at about 10 times forward sales, 12 to 13 times forward gross profit, 37 times forward EV to EBITDA. So still very pricey. Expected to grow in the 20 to 30s. Again, I think you can find a better deal out there. All right. But Airbnb on a good quarter and a beat and raise is up 5% today. All right. Let's do a quick fire. Other earnings. Sorry, it's taking a little longer. It's earnings season. Moderna blows out first quarter earnings expectations, triples COVID vaccine sales, reported $1.7 billion in sales, reported $3.66 billion in net income, maintained its full year guidance of $21 billion in COVID vaccine sales. Moderna mRNA stock is down 1.1% today. We'll check in on the markets in a bit. And it's been really kind of flat since January. And down. Wow, look at this. Moderna is down 65% since the peak in September, as a lot of people, like, I haven't really gotten another booster in a long time. So that means I'm not buying any shot, right? So so Moderna, awesome company, helping us save, you know, whatever. I mean, this can get kind of muddy, but, like, you know, they created a vaccine that clearly has a lot of value monetarily. And if you had invested into them while they were developing, you would have made a lot of money still. you'd probably have doubled your money. But I think the market is realizing that maybe not everybody's going to get three vaccines a year. Going on to the next one, CVS Health. CVS Health raises forecast for the year as first quarter earnings tops expectations. Good quarter from CVS. You know, they beat, they gave a an outlook for 2022 that was higher than expectations, and they beat in the quarter. So another beat and raise, CVS. Great company, great stable company through cycle, up less than 1% today. And over the past 5 years, it kind of underperformed the S&P 500. Over the past year, though, it's done really well, especially in a crazy market. It's more of a defensive type of play. Generac beats Q1 earnings and revenue estimates. So a good quarter from Generac. And Marriott beats earnings expectations as occupancy and rate gains boosted by RevPAR. Done really well. It's up 2.4% as the market has already priced in a lot of the strength in the return to travel. So as you see, Marriott stock has had a run up over the past 6 months, up 8% over the last 6 months, year to date up 8% in a bad market. So that's meaningful outperformance. And over the past year, up 20%. Over the past 5 years, 82%. So pretty good. As long as you don't think we hit a massive recession. Yum Brands missed estimates as China weighs on KFC Pizza Hut sales. In case you didn't know, in China, they love their KFC. I'm not just saying that. Like, I saw a YouTube video that, like, in China, they love KFC and Pizza Hut. I think they have a different menu, though. And obviously, China is locked down very meaningfully. Yum Brands is a holding company that owns a lot of different brands, such as Taco Bell. Let's actually look together. I'm interested. So Yum Brands stock is down 0.7% today. Yum Brands. KFC, Pizza Hut, Taco Bell, The Habit Burger Grill, Wing Street, and a few other ones I've never heard of. I always loved the combination Pizza Hut and Taco Bell's, where they're like, yeah, we bought one building, we're going to slam two of these brands together. okay, so that was all that. And then let's check in on the market again. Let's go to our friendly FinViz. Oh no. Come on. We said May flowers, not May showers. So NASDAQ down 0.75% today as the market is now weaker. The S&P is down 0.17. Let's go to the heat map. Amazon is down 1.36. Apple is up 0.5%. Microsoft flat. Google down 0.5%. Facebook down 1.2%. Tesla is basically flat. Visa, MasterCard doing well. Diversified banks are doing well. Healthcare doing poorly. Energy doing well. Obviously, energy is up almost 5%. Oil is up almost 5%. All right, cool. So we just rounded out that. Thank you so much for joining the chat live. Everyone smash the like button. Over 200 people here. Always is making a good point about Moderna. They're more than just vaccines. As a reminder, the mRNA technology is optimistically hoped to be able to solve a bunch of different healthcare issues. I'm not like a expert on it, but I think they think that the mRNA technology can be used to solve different things outside of just a virus vaccine, but to be determined, to be seen. Let's check in on some other ones like Palantir. Palantir down 3% to $10.23. It's been tough, down 60% since peak. Well, I guess since peak, it'd be down 71%. What else? Square stock. I mean, oh, people like PayPal. So Square's down 5.5%. Ouchies. PayPal is down 1.7%. And it is earnings season. Let's go to I wanted to call out other earnings. Starbucks happened yesterday. FOMC rate decision is today at 2 p.m. The Jay Powell presser is at 2:30. So watch the market move at 2 and 2:30 when Powell opens his mouth. And if the market jumps up, or gaps down, that's the reason. Okay. 2 p.m. 2 to 3 p.m. is going to be a very wild ride today. Today, earnings after the close, we got Etsy, Twilio, Fortinet. And tomorrow, before the open, we have Shopify, Crocs, Penn National Gaming, Datadog, Royal Caribbean, and Wayfair. Awesome. So let's deal with like one or let's address one or two meeting pulse questions while we pick a winner. We have 130 likes. Let's get that to 150. 20 more likes, please, guys and gals. Amin is saying 2x leverage ARK is now trading as TARK, TARK stock. Wow, this is a 2x leveraged ARK innovation. It just launched. Oh, this is interesting. Okay, I'm so confused. So the firm behind the anti-ARK ETF is launching a fund that doubles the performance of Cathie Wood's flagship product. Uses derivatives to track double the performance of ARK-K. In case you didn't have enough pain in your life, you can double the pain with ticker TARK. But they also have another one called SARK, which is short ARK, and it tries to be, it uses derivatives to go to short ARK when you would have doubled your money if you invested in November of last year. And let's just check in ARKK stock, which is down 4% today. It's a pretty brutal chart. Awesome. Okay, so going to Q&A. Let's go to Q&A. Oh, let's pick a winner. Let's do $20 prizes if we hit 150 likes. We've got 8 more likes to go. I'm going to pick the first winner while we're at it. So if you're in the Meaning Pulse, scan with your phone the QR code or a link in the description into a new tab or something, and I'm going to start the raffle. So start the raffle. And guys, maybe I really wish long-term that YouTube embeds these interactive features into itself, but for now we have to pay thousands of dollars to use Meeting Pulse. All right, so the winner should have a pop-up. Please put in your information. The top upvoted question for the day is, at what EBITDA or free cash flow margin would Uber start becoming interesting, and what type of EV to EBITDA or EV to free cash flow multiple do you think it would command at that point? So my thing is, I'm an optimist. I'm a technology optimist. I think that robo self-driving, autonomous driving, level 4, level 5, robo taxis will happen. I think they'll happen in the next 20 years. So if you do a DCF where a business gets cut in half or maybe dies, who knows how it plays out after 20 years, that means that you can't value, like the terminal value of the stock is very, very low. Therefore, Uber, in my opinion, needs to be on the DCF, like a 20-year DCF, where they grow and do well, depending on mobility and food delivery. And then that last year terminal value, where you slap a multiple or you do a Gordon growth model or whatever, there's like a lot of different ways, is meaningfully really low. So it's really, if you think about it, it's kind of like a 25-year bond that doesn't really pay back its principal. You just get paid this growing level of cash flow over 25 years, maybe 30 years. And like that's how you would value it back in the envelope. Therefore, I think the EBITDA, like I think of it as more of a value stock. So you're buying it for under 15 to 20 times EV to EBITDA, or like an over 5% free cash flow yield. But then again, something like that with robotaxi, you don't know how it's going to play out. Maybe Tesla buys the app and then pushes robotaxis through the app. Maybe they diversify away, right? They're doing all these different types of deliveries. Maybe Uber Freight is really big. You don't really know, but I would require in this market, in these multiples, I'd probably require under 20 times EVD, or 20 times or less EVD EBITDA. Because you can buy AMD now for like low 20s EVD EBITDA. Right? So that's how I would think about that. JS is the winner of the first $20 raffle. JS, congratulations, Jay. We hit 150 likes. Let's pick another winner. Start raffle. Second winner should have a pop-up in your meeting post. Go check. Second question while we wait for the next winner. How to best educate ourselves as retail investors? Where to start? Well, I think the most fun way is owning stocks, following the stocks, and tuning into like folks like this. And it's like, this is why we do it. I think other books is, I think like listening to podcasts, like We Study Billionaires, a few other kind of like investing podcasts are really great. And it's really cool. Like I like podcasts and audiobooks. I think the audiobooks, I don't think we all need to be DCF modelers or like real deep analysts as individual investors. That's why we're building ROI Club. Like the whole point is to build a hedge fund team to do that with you, but everybody can be in the conversation together. But I think you can read some books like The Most Important Thing by Howard Marks. There's a book that collects all of Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway letters. That's always really good. And again, you can always do it through Audible, like audiobooks. I think reading or audiobooks, podcasts. I think less about the buy these five stocks now, right? Don't spend your time on that. Spend it much more on following companies and how they do as businesses. Because the only way I believe very strongly that you beat the S&P 500, otherwise why even bother, is not so much opining about what to buy over the next 3 to 6 months. It's understanding what business models are going to win. What business models are going to win. And then the valuation is, am I at least not paying through the nose? Thing is with Shopify stock, right? I don't know if this is going to be the overall winner over 20 years. And that's why I really hated the stock on the way up right here. I really spoke out against it. Not only that, the valuation was just like nosebleed. And we've talked about this Canadian big tech premium where Canadian stocks just had that. And so it's come back down quite a bit since then. But certain things like NVIDIA might do really well, and maybe you're willing to pay through the nose on NVIDIA, even willing to pay 30 times EV to EBITDA, knowing NVIDIA is going to be the future. You know, I'm not a semiconductor expert, so that's a little bit harder for me, et cetera. So Vanessa, congratulations, Vanessa. You were the second winner, $20. We're buying lunches all around. I'm going to buy a third person a lunch, okay? So let's new raffle, third person. One more quick one before we leave. Tom's in the chat. What's up, Tom? Love you all. Thanks so much. Will is saying by the time robo-taxis or whatever fairy tech comes out of Uber will be so established with so much money they can pivot. That's also a legitimate outcome for Uber. I think that's really great. Third winner, please check the meeting pulse. I'm picking another one. Peter Lynch's books. Yeah, so this one's really good. I really like it. Value Investing from Graham to Buffett and Beyond by Bruce Greenwald. I thought this was a very good one. And Philip Fisher's, this is a classic, Common Stocks and Uncommon Profits. Peter Lynch's books are great. Joel Greenblatt's book is the little book that still beats the market, is really good. Stefan, you won. Thanks for joining. Thanks for playing. Thank you, everyone. Don't forget to hit that like button on your way out. Love you all. And go watch Money Talks. We are going to post it in the next minute. See you next time. And don't forget to watch the market at 2:30. Bye.